It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. So are we a country any less divided after day one of the televised impeachment hearings? Any more unified on the facts of what happened with Trump and Ukraine this year or on their importance? Not yet, judging from what I saw on Fox News and MSNBC this morning. On MSNBC in the 7 o'clock hour, Joe Scarborough said Republicans he knows were saying how embarrassed they were for their party after yesterday's weak showing by their members at the hearing, such as relying on debunked conspiracy theories. And historian John Meacham described Trump's behavior as an attack on the sovereignty of his own country's 2020 election. On Fox, their lead angle in the 7 o'clock hour was that there was no smoking gun yesterday, and neither of yesterday's witnesses ever spoke to the president. They went on to make a Sixth Amendment argument. The Sixth Amendment says a defendant has a right to confront his accuser, which they took as a right to call the whistleblower. So this is not to declare any false equivalencies between the two lines of discussion, just to say, after detailed testimony by two very credible witnesses, the usual lines of demarcation did not crack after day one. Here's one line from the ranking Republican on the Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, from his opening statement yesterday addressing the two witnesses that, in a funny way, maybe in a kind of opposites day way, asserts a larger context for what Trump was doing with Ukraine.
It seems you agreed, witting or unwittingly, to participate in a drama. But the main performance, the Russia hoax, has ended, and you've been cast in the low-rent Ukrainian sequel.
Devin Nunes from yesterday, and yes, both parties might agree in their own ways that Trump-Ukraine is a sequel to Trump-Russia. Let's talk about that angle and more with David Remnick, editor of The New Yorker and host of the New Yorker Radio Hour from here at WNYC. And among other things, David was author of the book Lenin's Tomb, The Last Days of the Soviet Empire, which won a Pulitzer Prize. Before joining The New Yorker, David was a Washington Post Moscow correspondent for 4 years. Hi, David. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning, Brian.
Let me ask you to just go right there. As a Putin watcher, as well as a U.S. politics watcher, I'm curious what you were thinking when Devin Nunes called the Ukraine investigation a low-rent sequel to the Russia hoax.
Devin Nunes also made weird allusions to the possibility we might see naked pictures of the president of the United States, which I'm glad he alerted us to this. But here's the thing. The Republicans yesterday were engaged in spraying squid ink to cloud the very, very clear testimony by public servants who are distinguished and long-serving that there was an extortion racket going on, that the President of the United States, together with former Mayor Rudolph Giuliani and two Ukrainian hucksters now under indictment, were conspiring to put a extremely vulnerable ally, Ukraine, in a terrible place, to tell them they're not going to get the defense money that had already been allocated last February by Congress, to defend themselves against Russia, which has invaded Ukraine twice, once in Crimea and again in the Donbass, and unless they played ball, unless they helped the White House in their efforts to diminish Joe Biden and his family. And it's very clear. We've had this. The testimony has been gone on and on in private and then issued as transcripts. And now we've seen the first two witnesses in public. The Republicans have a terrible case, and they know it. They just know it. And just because you call something boring, as Fox does, or Breitbart does, or say there's no dramatics, just because you stamp your feet and come up with conspiracy theories that have nothing to do with the situation in front of you, doesn't mean it's true. They have a terrible case.
I want to take advantage of your Russia expertise to continue to pursue this line of Ukraine investigation, a sequel of Russia investigation, as early as the Republican convention in 2016. As you well know, David, as soon as Trump took control of the party, the GOP platform flipped from being pro-Ukraine, helping them defend against Russian aggression, to being more pro-Russia on Ukraine. And that raised suspicions, even back then, about doing Putin a favor, though, while he was helping Trump get elected. But Robert Mueller never went there. I'm curious how you see Trump-Ukraine in this bigger context of Trump-Russia.
Well, there's no question that Mueller's testimony in front of Congress was way too technical and formal and of another era to be effective in the raw political sense. But the Mueller report, the second part of the Mueller report, alluded to 10 concrete instances of potential obstruction of justice. And it was up to Congress to take up that or not take up that. Clearly, Mueller felt that it was not on him to recommend or not recommend impeachment. And Nancy Pelosi, for political reasons, thought that these instances in the Mueller report were too complicated to get much traction. I don't think she disbelieves them, but she thought they were too complicated to get traction. Mm-hmm. But when this came up with Ukraine over the summer, and then came to light in early fall, it was so concrete. And all along, for the last 3 years while in office, and prior to that while campaigning, Donald Trump's affinity for the autocrat Vladimir Putin has been manifest. You've seen it in public. You've seen it reported by aides in private. You've seen it in book after book. You've seen it in a stream of reliable investigative reporting in The New Yorker, in The New York Times, in The Washington Post, on and on and on. And finally, who are you going to believe?
David Remnick, editor of The New Yorker, host of The New Yorker Radio Hour, our guest. Listeners, if you want to react to anything that happened at day one of the impeachment hearings, our phones are also open at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. David, I want to play a 3-minute excerpt from our evening coverage last night. Mm-hmm. I spoke with New York Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, one of the Democratic questioners on the Intelligence Committee. And I want to play this excerpt from that exchange and get your reaction in the context of Trump and Russia. This begins with one of my questions.
Sure.
So how close is this to your case for impeachment in a nutshell as of now? That President Trump violated his oath of office by twisting U.S. foreign policy to serve his own personal advantage in a way that ran contrary to the national security of the United States.
Yeah, I don't agree. I don't disagree with a word of that, but I would put it slightly differently, which is to say, I just want people to ask themselves, if you're listening and you're undecided about this, ask yourself whether it can be okay for an American president, any American president, to go around the world using the power of his office and American taxpayer dollars to get foreign leaders to drum up investigations against American political opponents. I mean, just imagine if Barack Obama was pressuring the leader of India to start an investigation of Mitt Romney a few years ago, what these Republicans would have said, if he was withholding U.S. military assistance to further that objective. They would be crystal clear that that is not just an impeachable offense, but something no American president can ever be permitted to do because it's so damaging to our democracy. So as a precedent, as something that we must take a stand against, I just can't think of anything more serious when you think about what it would mean. And if the Republican defense is, you know, so what? Yeah, he did it, but so what? Which I predict to you is where they'll end up. I just want to say, so what is where our democracy goes to die? It cannot be okay for this kind of conduct by a president of the United States. And that's why it's so important that the independent branch of government the founders gave us, the Congress, take a stand.
Then let me go even further down that road, Congressman, because I've been wondering, looking at your witness list for this week and next, how narrowly focused the Democrats' articles of impeachment might be on this one incident with Ukraine, as opposed to making a larger case that comes close to treason, that the president keeps tilting U.S. foreign policy to give aid and comfort to what Vladimir Putin wants, a weaker Western alliance so he can take more land in Europe, which the whole Western world thinks puts all our security at risk, and this is just one example of it.
Yes, I mean, I think you're getting at some very important issues that will form the heart of potential articles of impeachment. I don't want to prejudge what will happen when we submit a report to the Judiciary Committee, but if you're asking me, I think if you look at the Nixon articles of impeachment, you have a pretty good guide around the high-level issues of abuse of office, obstruction of Congress, and the like. And here, the abuse of office is what we've discussed. You know, using the presidency to try to smear a political opponent with foreign assistance, that just can't be okay. It cannot be okay for an American president to engage in that conduct. Our democracy cannot survive that type of conduct by any American president from either political party.
That was New York Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney with me last night after his questioning of the witnesses in the impeachment hearing yesterday. We're with David Remnick now, editor of The New Yorker and host of the New Yorker Radio Hour and a longtime observer of Russia and Vladimir Putin. David, he didn't want to go to the more extreme scenario that underlied the Russia investigation of Trump working on behalf of Putin's interests in global geopolitics in ways that run counter to our own country's interests.
It's really that.
Well, it's harder to prove. It's harder to prove. And remember, if you go back to Watergate, it's not as if the three articles of impeachment took in every sin and potential sin of the Nixon administration or even the Watergate scandal broadly defined. It narrowed in on a set of particulars, and I expect that's what this what the House will do. And it will focus on, as the congressman said, abuse of power, bribery, and the obstruction of justice. It was very interesting yesterday to hear the Republicans go on and on about how these witnesses only heard things secondhand. Well, this is hilarious because, of course, the people who are closer at hand, hearing things firsthand, John Bolton, Acting Chief of Staff Mulvaney, Giuliani himself,
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, also.
All these people have been blocked from testifying by who?
Right.
By the White House. So to echo what the congressman was saying, I was very eloquent. It was a very eloquent moment yesterday when Schiff said, look, if we find that the president of the United States abused his power and invited foreign interference in our elections, must we simply get over it? I'm quoting him here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what Americans should now expect from their president? If this is not impeachable conduct, what is? And I think he put it very clearly. And it did not go answered very well by the Republicans yesterday. I thought it was a disastrous day for them.
So Pompeo, Bolton, Mulvaney, Giuliani, the people who did speak directly with the president about the shadow Ukraine policy, won't testify.
Sorry to interrupt, but what I would add to that is Mulvaney may not have testified and may not testify to this committee. But you have to recall his performance in the White House briefing room when he basically said there was, of course, a quid pro quo and we should all get over it.
Right, because it happens all the time.
Giuliani has said this in public how many times? The president of the United States on the White House lawn has admitted the same and said maybe we should do the same with China. In other words, the moral floor gets lower and lower and lower. And the congressman is absolutely right to point out what would have happened if Barack Obama had tried to collect, do this kind of extortion on a foreign nation. He used the instance of using India against Mitt Romney. What would we think? What would Mr. Congressman Jordan be saying? What would Devin Nunes be saying in the halls of Congress?
We will, however, hear next week from Gordon Sondland, the million-dollar Trump campaign donor who, with no government or foreign policy experience, he was in the hotel business like Trump, got named ambassador to the EU, and he was central to helping Trump leverage an announcement of political investigations that they were trying to get from Ukraine. Sondland will testify, and maybe the most newsworthy moment from yesterday was when Ambassador William Taylor revealed this previously untold story of a staff member of his back in July meeting with Sondland in a restaurant.
In the presence of my staff at a restaurant, Ambassador Sondland called President Trump and told him of his meetings in Kyiv. The member of my staff could hear President Trump on the phone asking Ambassador Sondland about the investigations. Ambassador Sondland told President Trump the Ukrainians were ready to move forward. Following the call with President Trump, the member of my staff asked Ambassador Sondland what President Trump thought about Ukraine. Ambassador Sondland responded that President Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden, which Giuliani was pressing for.
Wow. So Sondland's testimony next Wednesday is now even a bigger deal than it was going to be?
Well, I think it's an enormously big deal, but I think these testimony will add up and add up. In other words, we're going to see Masha Ivanovich, who was the ambassador to Ukraine, who was summarily thrown out of her job. She's going to be testifying on Friday. We're going to see Sondland. We're going to see all of these people. And I don't see any witnesses so far that are going to do the Republicans much good in somehow undermining the basic argument that's being put forth.
Let's look ahead to tomorrow. Marie Yovanovitch coming to testify, the ambassador in Ukraine, who her colleagues say was the victim of a smear campaign by Rudy Giuliani because she wasn't doing Trump's bidding and then was recalled by Trump. Fox's angle on that I saw this morning was that ambassadors serve at the pleasure of the president. They're not independent actors. And going even further, here's how Devin Nunes yesterday in that opening statement tried to flip the script on who the victims were here, not naming Yovanovitch by name, but referring to the whole professional Foreign Service Corps.
I'll conclude by noting the immense damage the politicized bureaucracy has done to Americans' faith in government. Though executive branch employees are charged with implementing the policies set by our president, who is elected and responsible to the American people, elements of the civil service have decided that they, not the president, are really in charge.
Devin Nunes yesterday. David, your reaction to that?
I don't think Devin Nunes has a case. I think what he's doing is trying to make sure that the base does not change its mind. I think that's the key here. He knows that the likelihood is that the House of Representatives will put forth articles of impeachment, or the committee will, and that people will vote along party lines and it will go to the Senate. The greatest danger beyond impeachment that the president faces is if public opinion turns to such a degree that Republican senators begin to peel off and consider voting for conviction. And he wants to ensure that that is unlikely and never happens. And so far, that's the likely outcome.
After one day, and we'll see how successful the Democrats are at rolling out a narrative over multiple days. Yovanovitch tomorrow, 3 days of testimony next week. We'll see what comes after that at changing the minds of anybody around the country who might put enough pressure on their Republican senators. We will see. Leslie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for telling the truth here. You know, I'm very concerned that there's not been enough attention to the testimony yesterday by Taylor that Bill Barr knew all about this so-called drug deal. If he knew about it and he is now sticking this special investigation on the origins of the Trump-Russia investigation, I feel like there's a real beyond effort to undermine the rule of law. This is Barr is right in the middle of this thing, and I think that needs more attention.
David, anything on Bill Barr?
Not so far. I mean, Bill Barr is you know, made it very clear that he is not going to budge from the president's side, and we've seen a little distance open up when he apparently told aides that he had refused to get up and do a press conference that would have, you know, really demeaned him. But so far, he is very much in Trump's corner. So I don't think we know everything that the caller is asserting in every detail. So we'll have to see.
Susan in Rutland, Vermont. You're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi. It's so good to hear David Remnick's voice analyze this. I just find it's totally ironic. Ever since I can remember the news, post-World War II, the Republicans were staunch anti-communists and anti-Russia. And here we go, what, 2 years, 3 years into a different regime that they will support Russia versus the Ukraine. And I just want to point out, I don't know if you heard Christine Amanpour's program yesterday, but she had Garry Kasparov, and the interviewer asked point blank about Trump being an asset of Putin, and he said, absolutely. And he said, what did you mean? And he said, KGB, just look at the way Putin looks at Trump. That's how he used to look at his KGB agents.
Garry Kasparov, the chess champion and Russian dissident. And David, it's hard to go that far, right?
I respect Garry Kasparov very much, but I you know, I'm a journalist, and I'm only prepared to say what the reporting will tell us. And I, you know, this, you know, one thing is to be what Lenin once called a useful idiot. Another thing is to be a knowing agent of a foreign land. And I don't, you know, I don't
see that. The evidence isn't there.
No. The damage is deep enough. His behavior is confounding enough to raise all kinds of suspicion, and it has, but I never want to go beyond what we know to be the fact.
And David, one of the arguments that the Trump defenders make is that if you look at our actual arming of Ukraine during the Trump administration compared to during the Obama administration, the Trump administration has gone further with the types of lethal aid that they are willing to provide as a matter of policy that Obama said no to.
True, which makes this all the more confounding. You know, Congress earmarked this money in 2016, and this was supported by the Trump administration. But clearly, when it came around to this year, he saw it as a lever to his advantage to hold that funding back. And the hearings that we're witnessing now are going to tell us the details of how this all happened, why it happened, and where, if anywhere, to cast serious blame. The hearings, we have to hear the hearings. We have to hear these witnesses. And yesterday was, for the President of the United States, a very alarming start.
And I don't know if we'll hear through these witnesses that there's a difference between what Trump wants with respect to Ukraine and what the Trump administration wants. We did hear that asserted by one of our other Russia expert guests earlier this week, that the Trump administration is arming Ukraine despite Donald Trump, not because of Donald Trump. Again, we'll see if, you know, the force of the State Department and the Pentagon and all the intelligence agencies who feel this is really important did manage to, you know, move Ukraine policy forward despite Trump wanting to do something different that might be more to the benefit of Vladimir Putin. But that, I think, is to be proven. David on the Upper East Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, David.
Yeah, good morning. There's a little quirk that I noticed, and I haven't heard anybody talking about it. It doesn't change the argument, but it's interesting. The United States put restrictions on the use of the Javelin missiles to Ukraine. This is documented in the Wall Street Journal on January 4th, 2018. U.S. Ukraine try to ensure weapons don't fall to enemy. On Foreign Policy, which said they play a central role.
I think you're trying to make the case that the Javelin missiles don't really matter because Ukraine isn't allowed to use them against Russia?
Quirk. They're allowed to use them only if there's some new invasion. They cannot use them in the east, in Donbass.
But what does that change if the central question is, whether Trump was trying to use the Javelin missiles as leverage to get Trump to do him, to get Ukraine to do him a political favor.
It doesn't change anything. It's just an interesting little factoid that the missiles are being stored in central Ukraine, that they're not being used in Donbass, that when people say they went to the front, they didn't see the missiles being used. That's very, you know, subtle, but nobody's ever said they saw them.
David,
but,
thank
but it, all I'd say is try to imagine the sense of insecurity in Ukraine. Crimea was taken over by Russian troops and has ever since been occupied by Russia. That just happened, and the world allowed it to happen, and it stands. And Russian troops remain in the east of Ukraine, in the region called the Donbass. And the world hasn't been able to do a hell of a lot about that either. So try to imagine the sense of enormous insecurity and nervousness in a country that has only been trying to establish itself as independent and standing on its own two feet since 1991, which, you know, is a, in historical terms, a very short period of time. And it's been one drama after another, both internally and externally.
Melanie in Fort Greene, you're on WNYC. Hi, Melanie.
Hi. I have, it's an opinion. I'd like to know your opinion. You guys covered very thoroughly the narrow scope of the Democrats' questioning. And I got the point, Mr. Bennett, that the larger case of treason would be harder to prove. Do you think the Democrats ought to go there, either of you?
Well, in political terms, I see why they don't. I mean, there's been a lot of journalism, for example, on what the Trump administration may or may not be up to in its relations with Saudi Arabia. Is there an economic reason, a matter of self-dealing, when seemingly the President of the United States overlooks the leadership of Saudi Arabia assassinating a Saudi journalist who works for the Washington Post? What's behind that? What's behind Trump's relationship with Turkey vis-a-vis his desire to be, you know, have a hotel there? And so on and so on. This list is a very, very long list, but it's, I think, politically impossible to try to do everything, because you may end up at just failing colossally. Richard Nixon's sins were not limited to what was outlined in the three articles of impeachment in 1974 by the House Judiciary Committee. They, you know, but it's going to take a lot more journalism and probably historians to do a full accounting of the extent of the corruption in the Trump administration or in Donald Trump's family. But that's not the way politics works or can work.
And emoluments profiting off the presidency and hush money with Stormy Daniels, and that he's basically named as a criminal by the U.S. attorney in New York. In that case, the Democrats will figure out whether to list those as articles of impeachment or not. I want to play one more clip from Devin Nunes from yesterday from the opening statement. And David, I don't know if you've gotten your mind around this little subplot. I'm just starting to get mine. But he names a witness the Republicans would like to call, but the Democrats are not allowing. Listen.
Violating their own guidelines, Democrats repeatedly redacted from the transcripts the name of Alexander Chalupa, a contractor for the Democratic National Committee who worked with Ukrainian officials to collect dirt on the Trump campaign, which she provided to the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign.
So Alexandra Chalupa, Nunes is trying to make a case that Trump wasn't doing anything so unusual, that foreign countries helped their American presidential candidates of choice and Ukraine helped Clinton in 2016. This is usually seen as a debunked conspiracy theory, and I should say
It is a debunked conspiracy theory. Devin Nunes is trying to do a couple of things at once. He's trying to cloud the issue. He's trying to create a situation where the viewer just walks away and says, ugh, all politics is corrupt. They all do it. This is nothing special. It's politics as usual. Therefore, I'm sticking with the guy I voted for in 2016, meaning Donald Trump. That's the strategy.
But to put even a finer point on it, and that makes it even more intriguing for me, there's a Politico article from a couple of days ago called "I'm on a Mission to Testify. Dem Ukraine Activist Eager for Impeachment Cameo." And Alexandra Chalupa wants to testify. Why? To refute Republican assertions that Ukrainian officials used her as a conduit for information in 2016 to damage Donald Trump. And yet Nunes keeps bringing her up and says the Democrats won't let her testify.
Look, I think two words that come up over and over again, in my mind anyway, when we think about the last 3 years, are shamelessness and brazen. There seems to be no bottom to what, and it pains me to say this, it brings me no joy, but no bottom to what the President of the United States is willing to say or do.
And I know you've got to go in a second. How about the other side of that? Why doesn't, if that's what she's saying, if Politico is right, why doesn't Adam Schiff just call her?
Or, well, you could equally say, why doesn't Adam Schiff call Hunter Biden or Joe Biden to testify? Because I think this plays into the diversionary desires and dreams of the Republican Party. I am not here defending the notion of Hunter Biden being on the Burisma board. Unfortunately, it smells of too much of Washington as usual and the whole K Street phenomenon. But it is not, unfortunately or not, it's not illegal. It's not a crime for him to sit on that board. In fact, Joe Biden, if anything, acted not in the interest of his son, but counter to the interests of his son, as the pressure he applied on a prosecutor in Ukraine. I'm not saying these things are good, but it is clouding the issue here. You have a president of the United States who tried to extort an ally for his own political benefit, not for the benefit of the nation. He wasn't negotiating for the benefit of the nation as presidents do. He was trying to get personal political capital by doing the maneuver he did, and that is arguably illegal, and it's up to Congress to make those determinations.
David Remnick, editor of The New Yorker and host of the New Yorker Radio Hour, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.